Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Get a gun.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slam Fire Radio. This is episode 534 for November 29th, 2023. I'm one of your hosts, Adriel.
I'm another host, Kyle.
And I'm the only one left, Mo.
The only one left. Is that your nickname?
Yeah.
Battle Royale. Mo's the only one left.
The leftovers.
Everyone else on the island is dead. Just Mo's left.
Yeah.
He had an axe. He had a
axe.
Tanfoglio. And got it done.
Nice. Thanks.
Anyways, I'm super curious to hear what you guys got for Black Friday. So, Kyle, I feel like you were the other person that spent quite a bit. So, I want to hear what you did over the last week.
Okay. Well, Friday I was off work, so I was on my computer Friday morning with my morning coffee and exercised the credit card a little bit.
Recipe for disaster.
Yeah. So first thing I ended up doing actually was I bought a couple holsters from We the People.
Okay.
So both inside the waistband, one of them for the Taurus, and then I got another one for the Zev. But I also got it so that I could put my TLR1 on at the same time.
Okay.
So we were playing around the other day and found out that if I go 4 o'clock and do it right, I can conceal a 1911. So I might be able to do that with the Zev. So yeah. And it come with
like
a...
More holsters should have that light option, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very practical.
Yeah. I know there's some that make it, but... It'd be nice if you didn't have to change out your light and then get a new holster. But, you know, it's when you're molded like that. Unfortunately, that's the game we play. One of the things I got along with that, it's they actually got an interesting clip. You can mount in your vehicle and their belt clip actually clips into it. So you pull out your holster and then clip it under your dash or console or whatever. So that'll be cool to try.
I think that would be good for getting in and out of the vehicle, right? You don't want to drive with an appendix carry holster and to put it always in the same spot.
Small of the back even.
Ugh, terrible. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, those are coming at some point. I don't have them yet. I also went on and figured, well, while I was spending money, I decided, hey, I should really get a new recoil spring for my 2011 because it is probably double the recommended rounds that a recoil spring should have on it.
Oh, wow.
So I went on to Atlas and I know they have a 5-spring kit so you can actually tune different weight springs. So I've got that. So I'll actually try out different springs and see what I like best in the STI. And of course, while those were not on the Black Friday sale, but I noticed that they had mags on. So I ended up, yeah, it's been a while since I bought mags and figured, you know, having a couple match mags would be good. And then I have training mags. So yeah, I bought a couple mags, the black DLC with gold base pad with their competition follower. So instead of 20, 21 rounds, they'll actually hold, they should hold 23 rounds in a 140 mil tube.
Which salt mine do you sell your son to?
Yeah, well, it's potash out here.
Okay. Fertilizer prices are high. That stuff's liquid gold.
Yeah. Then buddy of mine, Craig, who I usually go to Arizona with, he was buying some stuff from Unrivaled and asked me if I wanted one of the Unrivaled 2-stage buffers. They were $30 off. So I said, yep, sure. They did not waste time shipping. It arrived Monday. So this is it here. They call it a dead blow buffer, basically. It's the same thing as the JP, which I realized afterwards that, wait a minute, I put a JP silent capture in my gun, but it's the JP is not two-stage, so it would really, at the end, it's got the other spring, so it would just soften the back end of the stroke, and then, I don't know, I think with this dead blow, I think this is what they're calling the dead blow, because if you hold it down, and then there's magnets to bring it forward, it's almost like in motion, that'll give it a last little kick to make sure it's in battery. So it will be interesting to try that, especially after running the JP silent capture. So this is the JP silent capture, and then there's the unrivaled two-stage buffer. So quite similar. The spring rate does feel different, and I mean, while you can play with the weights on the JP, the unrivaled is one weight, but it is light. So I think, especially if you ran a low mass carrier, you could probably get more gas going out your comp because it would take less gas to actually cycle that bolt and bolt or recoil spring. So yeah, that'll be cool to check out. And then while I was buying stuff for the Zev, figured, you know what? I got to send my Delta Point Pro away because it likes to shut off after 5 minutes. So I got to send it away. There was something going on, and I searched forums, and it's regular. So I got looking and found that found an EOTech EFLX for basically $100 off normal price. So I bought that with a 6 MOA dot. And that's the thing. I think my Delta Point's like a 1-2 mil or 2 MOA at the most dot. So.
Nice.
That's a nice big window on that thing. Is it rectangular?
Well, there's a Delta Point. And then it sits a lot lower. So, and when you look at it, it looks like the viewing window is actually quite a bit smaller than the Delta Point Pro. But what I did was I lined them up up front. When you line them up up front with your actual viewing window, that's not really showing it. It's actually doesn't look like your viewing window is too much smaller. And then I did actually notice one thing. Leupold's usually really well known for their clarity, like color, not changing the colors of stuff. But holding up against the wall, the EOTech looks a lot clearer, like true color representation, than the Delta Point Pro. The Delta Point Pro almost looks tinted.
Has it got that blue tint on it?
It almost looks like that, yeah. Yeah. But the mounting screws for the EOTech are about half the length for the Delta Point. And of course, this Zev is one of the first ones made, and they don't use the standard, I think they're like an M3 or M6 screw that comes with like the EOTech or the Delta Point. So I actually contacted Zev, and they're awesome. They're shipping me out some 440s, a bunch of different lengths. Like they have three different lengths of screws. So I was like, okay, send me those. And I did remember seeing it before, like a Master Red Dot screw kit. So I went on Swamp Fox and ordered basically, it's this ultimate Red Dot screw kit. So it has basically every screw that Red Dots might use to mount. So that's coming as well. And yeah, looking forward to actually trying out that EOTech. And I like how it doesn't sit so high on the gun. A little closer to your normal sight plane with irons.
Yeah, don't have to hunt for it as much.
Yeah. And then on Saturday, a bunch of range guys we did our kind of Friendsgiving. And we realized that December has 5 Saturdays in it. So well, I was saying last week where we were talking that the 5th Saturday of the month, we get range time and we normally do steel challenge, but we're actually changing that and doing multi-gun. So now I'm planning another multi-gun match for the end of December. So
nice. Might as well get them in there. Yeah. So I'll be the second one at that club.
Yeah. I'll be the second one at the club. And yeah, we're going to put on a little steel match for our normally monthly match on the, is it the 16th? Yeah, I think it's the 16th. And then, on the 30th, we'll do the multi-gun. And
cool.
Yeah, and I guess this last one, should I even talk about that or no?
wait.
I'm looking.
Yeah, I think you should. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're good. I don't know what, I think you guys got to look at holidays and whatnot, but I put in my registration today for SHOT Show. And, okay. Got home, sent them their proof of eligibility at like 4 o'clock. And by 5 o'clock, I had an email saying that my media badge was approved.
That was quick.
Yeah, that was really quick. They were saying like 3 to 6 days, but yeah, that email come through here tonight. So yeah, at least I'll be at SHOT. Hopefully everyone else is on the show is able to make it and we can actually do like in person for once.
That would be something.
Maybe we'll do like a photo.
That would be, imagine that. but yeah, so at least I'm planning on going to SHOT. They said, hopefully you guys can make that swing with work and everything, and we can get the whole crew down there. But for the listeners, if there's something at SHOT you want checked out, I guess start sending them in and we'll start compiling a SHOT Show schedule.
For sure.
And now I'm going to do inventory at the range this weekend. We're going to go do inventory of all our targets. I was hoping to be able to run this EOTech a little bit, but well, I don't think I'll have screws by then. So that will have to wait, but
gonna put all your inventory on like on an online like Google Sheet or something like that, so that's easy for stage planners to build it out.
Yeah, and just so that we know too, like how many target stands we have, how many 45 degree target stands we have, you know, how much steel, all that stuff. And I put that on an Excel sheet or like you said, Google Drive, and it'll make it a lot easier. And then we're also looking at ordering more cardboard for next year as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to know what we have and figure out what we might need for next year. But that is it for me. How about you, Mo? What'd you get up to?
Well, I brought great shame to the show because I didn't end up buying anything for Black Friday. Just like the rest of us, I think 95% of the personal emails I get are like from gun shops, and they just kept coming in, and I kept looking, and a few times I went on there and I almost had them in the cart, and I looked and I'm like, oh, I can't. So I didn't end up buying anything, but looked like there was some really great deals out there. The ammo I had, the 9mm ammo I wanted, I had bought a week or two before, so I was happy with the price and it worked out, so I'm good. In terms of shooting, I went to an IPSC match at my local Montreal range. And it was the first one I did of the season for them. It was their second match, but the first one I did. And I went on the Friday night to help with the build. I was there early afternoon and I helped build the stages. And then I actually shot the match that night, which is nice. So I got it done all on the Friday night. It was only 4 stages. And my usual middle of the pack, I think I finished what I, so there ended up being 103 shooters. So it was a really good turnout, especially for an indoor match. And, for the production division, there were 46 people and I finished 13th. So I was happy with that, but, it's the consistency thing. As I've talked before, one stage I finished 7th, one stage I finished 10th, and another one I was like 25th, and that's the one I did really poorly on. And it's just a silly mistake because it was an unloaded start where we have to feed on the X's kind of a thing, and then we move into position. We're not like in front of the target, so we're moving to them, and unloaded, and somehow I bumped the safety, so it was on. And before I noticed that the safety was on, I'm fumbling around with the mags and checking. And it's something I have to, you know, remember to address right away instead of wasting, you know, valuable seconds trying to figure out what's going on. So that stage was obviously really bad. And then it flustered me. So I shot it poorly too, because, you know, you get off to a bad start and then things just spiral. But Go ahead.
What are you shooting for?
The gun?
Yeah.
Tanfolio. And I have a pretty wide safety on it, but I like it because it's a good thumb rest. So when it's actually down, it's beautiful because it helps me hold keep a good grip on it. It's just, again, this was an unloaded start, so I guess I must have bumped it, you know, getting into position. In a loaded start, when I'm drawing, I'm not normally touching it, right? Or popping it up, let's say, right? Engaging it. So it's just something I have to keep in mind, like for another stage like that, to, you know, look to it first, you know? So, but besides that, it's like, I do like that it's wide and it makes for a really good thumb rest. So, just a learning thing. And again, I know I can do better than I do, but it's always just one stage that sabotages me. I have nothing this weekend. I'm going to be registered for another match in another 2 weeks. December's going to be, I think there's going to be a couple matches in December, then three in January. So it's going to be a good month. And then the rest of the winter, there's always two or three matches a month. It's really good. What else did I do? Not really much. I don't really get to the range. But outside of matches, I don't get to the range as much as I'd like to. So I have to definitely get back to more dry fire. I'm not doing enough of it. And really, that's it. How about you, Adriel?
Oh, you know, I got after some sales. But maybe before that, went hunting. I tried to get both my kids out, and we got out. The youngest one, boy, it was really interesting. So I was wearing my like big red sleeping bag thing, orange toque, sitting at the corner of a field, like in broad view, and we're looking down a cut line where I shot my deer. I've got him set up for that, sitting bipod and everything, good to make like a long range shot. We sat there for, I don't know, like half an hour. Yeah, half an hour. And then I looked to our left and a doe starts popped out like 30 meters to our left. And we're just like sitting in the field and we have no cover or nothing. But it doesn't notice us. And I'm like, look, there's a deer. And he moves over, moves his bipod over. Behind the doe is a big, bad buck. And that's the only one he saw was the big buck. Oh. So we got on it. Took safety off, fired, and that buck didn't make it more than 20 meters and just piled up.
Didn't go 20. Nice.
Nice 4x4 buck.
Is that his first one? Or
that's his first. His first.
Awesome. Deer.
Yeah, that's his, amazing.
Yeah, the older one's got his deers before, but this is his first. But that was really good. It was everything for my older sons, like when I took him out deer hunting the first time and he got his deer, I was like, oh my God, like the deer couldn't have been more compliant. They like showed up on time and gave him lots. It's like banging his rifle around and they just like watched him and then he just shot him. And I'm like, oh, this deer is so nice. These ones are the same. He was like moving around. Just shoot. If you don't shoot, I'm going to take their rifle from you. Shoot that deer. At first it didn't notice us at all because it was on the trail of the doe and it had other things on its mind, but as soon as it made noise, he's like just looking at us for 5 seconds.
Amazing what the rut will do.
He was all horned up, but so we got him, and then processing, deer processing. So I am I'm flush with deer meat right now. I'll say that. Okay, now we'll get into the Black Friday deals. Okay, so Inner Surplus ran a deal on shipping and whatnot for their rifles. So me and a couple of buddies of mine bought some Mausers. Yeah, some C96s. This one here is Buddy Thomas's. He bought an Iron Sight one, so irons front and back. This one's got the nicest stock of the four that I'm looking at right now. It's got like a little bit of like a, what would you call that? Schnabel tip bulge at the end there. But the stock itself is really thin. These are all sporterized, right? All of them. So they're all cut to some degree of length. Some of them have like the turn, they turn down the bit of the barrel. This one's got a turn down bolt, which is really nice. One thing I really like on this one, the floor plate in it doesn't lock the bolt back. You can actually push the bolt forward on it because it's got like a tapered back, which is really nice. Yep. So that's this one. And then this one's the one I got. I just horsed around and threw a scope on it just for funsies. But that's not where I'm going to put that scope or any of that kind of stuff. That's not going to work. But this one, it's a bit more of a hack job. This one's like channeling my spirit animal when it comes to Swedish Mausers. The bolt on it has been very roughly welded to a turn down. I don't know if you guys noticed there, but that bolt handle is also kind of like flipped up a little bit oddly. But it still clears the scope, so I think I'm okay with that. The safety has also been, I don't know if you could say enhanced, but it's been changed. So instead of a wing, it's a tourney thing that doesn't really work that good. So might change something there. Yeah. The trigger on this one's amazing, though. Like, absolutely amazing. Oh, no, I can't show you because the safety's on. Okay. There's a safety off. This one's got a Timney trigger on it, and there is no movement to it.
Nice.
That's very nice. It's got finger grooves in the stock.
Ah.
Wow.
Fascinating.
That's for those extra tense moments.
Really press your fingers in there, right? This stock though is the worst of the four. It's very heavy, and they left like a lot of material on this thing, and it's got a lot of heft to it. So I might do something about that. I'm not sure. And then my other buddy got this little shorty guy here. This one's was a little bit more expensive, so it's got like a bolt knob on it. It's got like a longer stock, like
kind of weird, right?
Yeah, it basically goes up to the end of the barrel, which is kind of an interesting idea. It's got like checkering on it, whereas the other ones don't, or they have finger grooves. This one's
exactly
got nicer checkering now, on it.
Mm-hmm. That cheek pad, is that ambi or is it just left hand?
It's left hand.
Huh.
But I mean, I can use it as a righty just fine. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So it doesn't have the same thing on the driver's side of that?
Nope. Nope, there's one side.
Oh, yeah.
Look at that. Side.
Yeah, it is set up for a lefty. The other thing that this one has that's kind of cool, because if you put a scope on one of these things, there's your safety. Yeah, that's going to get in the way of like the eyepiece of a scope. This one also, so you can turn the safety off, and you can use, they have a little add-on one down here. You can use that instead.
Oh,
that
perfect. Box
trigger, and then you can use the
trigger. Now, could you completely remove that factory one then, or does that still have to be in place? Or you could just trim down that handle, so then it's just non-issue.
Or
then.
just leave it, because it's standing to the left, and even when you run it like this, it's just always to the left, so it doesn't matter.
All right.
Yeah, so interesting anyways, yeah, but there's a couple of like little idiosyncrasies that I'm seeing now that I have a few of these things, so I'll be writing an article that's got a little bit more information about what to look for and what not to look for and what not. Because of that, I ordered some dies off Amazon, if you can believe it. Amazon had like a decent price on 6.5 reloading dies.
Nice.
I got a 3-die set for $66, Lee. But like that was better than I could find at stores. And available too, because a lot of the availability was call it only. I'm like, nah, I want a full length resize for an old military rifle. I don't want to call it resize. So yeah. And so you get the factory crimp with those as well. So if I want to crimp the absolute hell out of them, I can. That'll be more for like the PAL instructor rifle, which is back there. I might switch and swap some parts based on what looks like it's going to be better. I ordered a Cabela's Intensity LR scope. A buddy of mine bought one, and I really like the turret on it. It's got like a, it's just like one of their Cabela's Covenant scopes, except the top deal has like quite a bit of MOA per turn. I can't remember if it was MOA or mil. I'm pretty sure it's MOA, but quite a bit of MOA per turn, which means you would have to turn it less. So price is right. I like the clarity on it for the price, so I got that. These were on sale. Trigger Tech's Duty AR triggers.
Oh, yeah.
Screaming price. Got one of those. I got a single stage this time. I've got two stage in the past, and I prefer that single stage kit trigger that you sold me, Kyle. I prefer the single stage to a,
yeah, that Galvin Elite.
Yeah. 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 And the weight on it's very light as well. But yeah. I prefer a single stage. So that's why I got this one.
Nice.
For action shooting, that kind of stuff's better, right? My Numerich order showed up today, and that one came with a replacement firing pin because I'm going to be grinding down this one so that I can use it as a PAL rifle so it doesn't fire. And some stuff for some other people and some stripper clips for the M96 Mausers so that you can run stripper clips to load them. Nice. That's kind of fun. They got like a little cutout on the side of the rifle right there to put your finger as you're loading it, kind of a thing. So
okay.
Yeah, you kind of like, you can, well, it's silly with a scope on here, but you can like push down and get your finger right down to the follower that way, right?
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, it's kind of neat. I'm not going to try to put too much money into these things because I have a feeling that it could be a money pit pretty quickly. Just be like, oh, I'm going to put a trigger. Oh, I'm going to put a safety. All of a sudden, your $250 rifle is now $500. And maybe you should have just got something better to start with, right? Mm. And then, oh, yeah. So I've done a couple of reviews on like bipods and did some reviews on some carbon fiber bipods. And this guy out of the U.S. is like, hey, you want to review mine? I was like, you bet I do. So those will be coming in on Friday here. So
nice.
My mailman's been, I actually had to help. The mailman came to my door. He's like, you got to come help me with this one. Cause I sent all those rifles in one box. It was too much. He was a baby though. It was no problem to move that thing around. And then, oh yeah. So I'm making maple seed rifle slings as well. So I'm making another batch of those. I repaired about 40 of them because we were using like the old H buckle we had was no good. So I've swapped those out of a bunch, and then I made 120 new ones. Hmm. Yeah, 120 new ones. They're all sewn, and now I'm just waiting for parts. Now that I know what I got to get, so I ordered about $400 worth of hardware off of the finest Chinesium sources, and be getting those in. Well, I mean, do you want to talk about how do you get 120 slings ready? You need QD sling swivels, the push button ones, and you need the HK clips. If you buy those from local sources, they're good.
the price
is going to be huge. I'm paying like a buck or two for each of them, right? So just get them in bulk. Yeah. But waiting on those right now. And I think that's about it for me. Yeah. So I should have a couple of extra things next week. I might not even have that Cabela scope. It hasn't even shipped yet. They're like, their free shipping when you get it is like really slow. So they promised to ship it in 10 days, which I think at 10 business days, that's them saying like, we're just going to wait a couple of weeks and then we'll mail it. It's very different. Like Trigger Tech, I had it in like a couple of days. Like they had.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like the difference.
Yeah. That's okay. The price is right. I don't mind. I don't mind waiting. If the price is good, I'll pay for speed and I'll
check
savings for anything else.
Yeah, it's not something you need right this second. And if there's a deal with it, then it's like, yeah, okay. I don't want to wait, but okay.
Yeah, it's worth it. Exactly. Let's get on to upcoming events. It's cold. There's not really a lot of events, but I did see a couple. Was there one on the Discord?
I don't recall on the Discord. We got emailed one. Cole Otto, December 9th.
You got it. Okay. Mm-hmm.
At Colby Shooting Club in Waterloo, Ontario. Pistol only outlaw match. Registration is open on practice course. Search Full Auto, PHULLOTTO.
Nice.
Very good. Let's move on to the news. La Presse, which I'm not familiar with. That sounds like some news outlet in Quebec. They broke the law. They made a prohib mag.
To prove how...
saw the article?
To prove how easy it was. Yeah. Yeah.
They went on some Facebook group and bought a magazine from someone and then made it into a prohib device.
Bragged about it.
And then wrote about it and bragged about it. Yeah.
Lovely.
We're in media. Can we break the law and then just say like, oh, we just did it for media's sake?
We're not liberal. We're not liberal media though.
Yeah.
We're not. Well, Mo is in an area of the country that Trudeau cares about.
Mo
though,
is so in you Quebec, won't get arrested. Yes. Uh-huh. The show is based out of Quebec.
Je m'appelle Adriel. Je suis un pamplemousse.
You're a grape.
Bonjour.
What? Qu'est-ce que c'est?
Sorry, that's the extent of my French.
That's about the extent of mine right there, too.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, they should be charged. They did it to prove that it's easy. And yeah, it is easy. But so is like smuggling them across the border. They're nothings, right? Or printing them or making. It's a box. It's a box with a spring in it. This is not high-tech stuff here. You could make one in a high school shop class.
Why don't they show how easy it is to make a bomb or how easy it is to use any other weapon?
We bought 2 tons of ammonium nitrate to show how easy this is.
La Presse should absolutely do that as a community service.
I think they might actually get arrested for something like that.
I would hope so.
Smuggling humans across the border. Like, what else can they do?
Just put everything to the test.
Yeah.
If it's making gun owners look bad, it's okay.
I know. Yeah. It's just it's leftist nonsense. But
yeah. And on that note, of the magazine limit, so LeBlanc is saying that the new mag limit will be 5. No more pin mags. I'm paraphrasing here.
Yeah.
But that's what he's saying. No payment, just confiscation.
Yeah, it's okay. His party's going to be out of business in another year or two. So
I think C21's coming in power before that year or two, though.
We'll see.
It's gonna come in because they're going to have it in. Well, we're already into the fall, into the winter here, but they're doing readings on it. It's going to come in. Now, the magazine part isn't part of C21. They said they're going to OIC that.
Oh, of course they are.
But when? Who knows? Who knows?
All right.
I would say that that's pretty explicit what they're saying. I wouldn't spend a fortune on a bunch of big mags. Or maybe you would, depending on which way you want to go with that. Some people want to panic buy stuff that's going to get banned. Some people don't want to buy stuff that they can't use at the range. Or
on the same note, though, didn't they say that before? And everyone like when they brought in their amendments, the G4 amendments, didn't they? The mag issues were in there. They were already talking about this because everyone was concerned about the tube guns and everything too.
It's been in the C21 since the start. Since the start, they've said that they're going to do something to fix the magazine regulations. But this information was a little bit more explicit on long guns, long gun magazines. Hmm. Still not saying whether they're going to be rimfire or manually operated. I hope they do because... I'm an accelerationist, and nothing will turn the East onto our side than having to chop the tubes on their bolt-action Cooeys and lever-action Winchester 94s.
Well, yeah, see, that's where we don't need a bill. We just need them to explain what they want in that bill, exactly how they plan on putting it into the bill, and then,
there's no bill, though. It's going to be an OIC.
Yeah.
So they could or could not deploy whatever magazine restrictions they so feel like. So yeah. It's hard to predict what's going to happen with that one. It's hard to predict. It's hard to whip up some fervor over it, which we don't really need anyways. Like as is, the Conservative Party looks like they're sweeping into a majority in the next year or whenever the next election is. It's just a question of could we accelerate the election? Could we make the Liberal Party so unpalpable that unpalatable that the NDP remove their support for them and they call a confidence vote?
Well, I think the Liberal Party is doing a good job of trying to make sure that happens.
Yeah, they are. They absolutely are. They're making everybody angry, which is wonderful. Like, so.
They'd have to make them more angry because for the NDP to pull support, the NDP has to have a win for them. And right now, there's no win. Right now, if they call an election, it's just another election. They stay at the same amount of seats. And the party that's kind of friendly that they were working with is no longer in power.
Yeah, and like the NDP can't afford another election.
No.
Also an issue. Yep. Those Rolexes and Gucci bags are too much. Anyways, that's where I think probably what's going to happen is they're going to get banned, fully prohib. A bunch of people are just not going to turn them in. And then a year later, the Conservatives will flip it. I think that's the most likely thing that's going to happen.
Oh, there's going to be PVC pipe, I think, is going to start flying off shelves.
There's going to be a bunch of musty magazines being brought out of, brought it back into circulation in 2 years.
Oh, that and vacuum sealers.
Ah, yes.
They're plastic. They'll be fine. They won't rot.
Yeah.
And the next bit of news, the CCFR has filed an appeal in the CCFR versus Canada case. So they have announced that they've appealed.
Yeah, it's official.
I'm glad they did. It's just I don't hold out much hope because.
Well, the Supreme Court might think different. Yeah. The Supreme Court ruled against Canada for the. What was the regulation that they pulled them on? It was none. They had lost just recently here. They said that the feds had overreached on, and I can't remember what it was. It wasn't carbon tax. It was something else. Anywho, they might hold to that constitutional delineation of no, you can't force the provinces to do this because, or the, no, this is like a violation of rights. I wouldn't hold your breath, but
I'm not holding my breath. It seems like when it comes to gun related stuff, logic and reason goes away. So
yeah, you can't just roll over though. You gotta keep pushing.
Oh no, I'm glad. Again, I'm glad they're doing it. I'm just not, super optimistic, let's say.
You're hopeful, but low expectations.
All right, let's go into new gun stuff. New gun stuff is brought to you by Bullseye North. Need a new boomstick? Bullseye North is Canada's shooting superstore and a proud supporter of the CCFR with a wide selection of guns and top trending gear for any shooter. Free shipping over $250. Some exclusions apply. Subscribe to their weekly newsletter to get first access to the hottest deals or, watch them on CGN. That's another good way to kind of see what they're up to. And speaking of, why don't I share my screen and we will look at what kind of deals they got. Now, the deals right now are just not as good as the deals last week. That's just where things are at. Let's see what Bullseye North has right now. Is this still on right now? Some people still have their Black Friday or their Cyber Monday sales on right now.
Yeah.
You still have this sale on. They do. Okay, so Bullseye North has some pretty good deals right now on powder. So if you're looking for H4831 or CFE223, a pound. Oh, it's out of stock. A pound for 47. It was too good of a deal. They had 8-pound jugs of 43.50 for a screaming deal. Oh, are they going to have it on here? Do I have to? I'm going to order price high to low. No, that's the wrong way. I don't want to see all the piddly little stuff. There we go. Out of stock.
So it was at a great price because they're out of stock.
Yeah.
What was the tight group going for? I just saw a tight group at the top, I think.
275 for 8 pounds. I paid close to that for 4 pounds a couple of years ago. So yeah, that's a good deal. I think powder's getting into more better supply. And it looks like small rifle bench rest primers. Oh, but those are the nicer primers. Those are quite a bit more expensive. They're out of all the good powder stuff, but they've got a couple of other interesting things. So definitely check them out. There was, so this isn't on CGN, this is on Reddit, but the latest batch of SG542s came in. This is the 308 yeah. Chilean? Is it made
Chilean,
in Chile?
Yeah.
Chilean rifle. I've seen like some reviews good, some reviews bad. This is definitely a bad review. Bigger gets with this rifle, one of the most expensive. The barrel was sticking out of the box when he got it from Canada Post.
I saw that.
I've had that happen to me before. Yeah. I would say that's you know, something that's going to happen. This thing cost triple my Type 81. It's a significantly lower quality. Overlooked $100 mags, but handling them in person makes that hundo bill much harder to swallow. They're getting to extortion levels, overpriced. Now they're sold out and scalpers are selling them for $200. There's no iron sights. The integrated rail is held on by two small screws, and it was kind of complaining about those. Doesn't like the trigger fit and finishes. Looks like it was hammered together by the Orcs of Mordor.
Oh, wow.
That's a very nerdy diss that you've got.
Orc, okay. Wow.
But pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah. So, anyways, that's, I just thought I'd bring that up because you don't see too many, too much information on this. Frontier Firearms has a pretty good deal coming on TNW Aero Survival Rifles for December 6th. They're going to have them down at 900. So
look
for a 9mm PCC. They're going to have those. And then this last one is from North Silva, but FOC will have these. These are the Breda M1 Garand Tipo 2 in 7.62 by, or 7.62 NATO, so 308. These are coming, it's not made from a parts kit, but it's an original rifle. So it uses end block clips, ships with original wooden crate with a leather cheek riser. So it comes in.
That is cool.
That is cool.
That is cool. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And it says what it is on the side there. Rifles, caliber 7.62, NATO Tipo 2. The leather hand straps on
what
there.
What are they selling them for?
I don't know. They're saying shipping to stocking dealers in 7 to 10 days. And I didn't see them on FOC's website. But
see, that would be worth the money. That even having the crate would be cool.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, let's see what you're paying for that crate and that cool factor. Tipo. Will it find it if I search Tipo? Nope. That's what about Garand? It might just not be up yet because it's saying. Oh, okay. Well, they've got Springfield M1. Well, that's not really the same, is it?
No.
But this is a surplus Springfield. They were selling for $2,800.
Who else was a stocking dealer?
That was it. Just FOC.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Oh, there we go. MSRP $3,000.
Okay.
$29,999 or $3,000.
Or $3,000.
Yeah.
Looks pretty cool.
That is neat.
That cheek rest is nice.
Yeah.
Do you need a cheek rest on one of these things? Maybe.
Add a little buffer from the wood beating you in the face.
Yeah.
Although those are pretty steady rifles anyways.
They are. They don't really recoil a whole bunch. That looks pretty dope.
They look in pretty decent shape too. Like the receiver looks pretty good.
Mo, this isn't calling out to your heritage to want to get one of these things.
Si, molto bene.
Molto bene. Okay. that's about it. I didn't really see anything else on CGN that looked too interesting, but again, like Black Friday just ended. My wallet, she's tired, boss. She needs time to rest.
Still got to get through Christmas yet, too.
Oh, yeah, Christmas.
I already told you, you spend all the money, and then you just tell the kids that you don't have it anymore. Yeah.
It's a solid plan.
Well, I'm already ahead. I got one big Christmas present already, so I'm already ahead from years previous. So,
for yourself or for someone else?
For someone else.
Oh, wow. Yeah. All right. I think they might be watching. So mom's a word. Mom's a word. Why don't we get into our main topic? And for this week, our main topic is buying and selling used guns in Canada. Oh, this is your topic. What did you want to cover in this thing?
Okay. So let's start off with where to buy and sell. Like what are the popular sites? We know CGN, of course, Canadian Gun Nuts.
Well, there's some peculiarities with that too, though, because how do you get on the EE for CGN?
Yes. Yeah. So, and then, with that, when we, for the people using it, you have to post a certain amount of messages, and be active before they'll invite you into the equipment exchange.
Correct. Yeah, isn't it, you have to post basically a hello into the introductions?
Well, you have to post a hello, but then you also
have
to engage in some other conversations, right?
I don't know if you're going to get into this, but another interesting thing with EE is posting pictures. You're better off using Dropbox or something like that, because to be able to post pictures on your ad, I know I was using it a fair bit and I still couldn't post pictures. So I just put on their
Imgur. Imgur is what you want to use. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So far I've bought a few things through CGN, but I've never sold anything. So in terms of buying, it was a good experience. I found what I wanted. Mm-hmm. I communicated with the seller, and there was no issue. So
from
that end, it was good.
Yeah, I mean, CGN's got feedback scores on here. So you can see how many times someone has bought and sold things to other people on the network, if you will, which I find this is a big social proof that you're dealing with someone who's legit.
Yeah.
And there's a little more confidence too. And if it's somebody that's a kind of active with their posts and stuff, like doesn't speak to their character, but I mean, at least you know they're around and, you know, in the community. Let's say it's not someone who just put two messages and now is selling thousands of dollars worth of merchandise that might not exist. So,
well, see, and besides the merchandise that didn't exist, that was me. I don't post, you'll see from Discord or whatever. I don't post a lot.
Okay, well, no,
I agree with what you're saying. If they're active and they have that feedback score and everything, it just helps you with being more confident in your purchase. Yeah. But just because they don't have that doesn't mean they're not.
I'm just saying from the perspective of this is a real person and, you know, a real member of the community, then at least you have that assurance.
Oh, right? Absolutely.
So,
yeah. Yeah, so in terms of, maybe we'll just do buying. So you can buy off CGN. They've actually got some pretty good categorization, because they've the different firearms, then accessories for those firearms, and they've got reloading stuff in here. So for example, I was looking for some 6.5 Swede brass because it was way too expensive to buy new stuff. And I found, was this a guy in Edmonton? Yeah, I found a guy in Edmonton who had, and I wish I had bought the 6.5 Swede dies off of him, because $50 for all of it was less than I paid. And that's a nicer set of dies than what I got anyways. But he had 6.5 Swede for 25 cents each.
Nice.
That is a pretty good price. So I PM'd him, and this is a local sale. So we're just going to arrange like an in-person meet.
Yeah.
Did you buy shipped before, Mo? When you bought off CGN?
No, so far the stuff I bought has been somewhat local between Quebec and Ontario, and I managed to meet up with the people, which it was going to be one of the things we talked about that I wanted to talk about. You know, the confidence, like for me personally, whether buying or selling, I would rather meet the person, whether again buying or selling, I'd rather, which I know is not, it's a big country and lots of geography and it's not always possible, but I feel more confident in meeting the person and you know, kind of shaking their hand and exchanging the money for the, you know, whatever.
Oh, for sure. So, that being said, I've done the shipping and I actually haven't had a bad experience. I've been fortunate. I mean, it's just like anywhere there are bad experiences, I'm sure, but
yeah, of course.
I think you can kind of get a feel when you talk to a person too.
Yeah. The thing about shipping that as a seller, I hate shipping because I have to find a box that's a correct size.
I was going to ask about boxes as well. Like, you know, like when you don't have the box for the product you're selling, what are you using? Are you actually going to buy a box? Are you looking around your house and, I got to take this paper box and turn it into a... Well,
I think you actually got one of my boxes, Mo, when I shipped your shotgun back to you.
It was in the Benelli. Yeah, it was in the actual Benelli.
So I had all the clay targets at the range. They after so many layers, they would have a big flat piece of cardboard, almost 4 feet by 4 feet. And I take them home because I take a few of them home because to powder shotguns or whatever. And then that box issue when you're trying to ship guns, I ended up just started making my own boxes.
Oh, okay.
I just take one of those big pieces and just make my own box.
I buy enough that I've got enough cardboard boxes just in my basement here that I can just use one of those or like reduce the size of it.
Yeah.
You know the trick I really like doing is taking my guns apart so I don't have to pay oversize.
Yeah.
Oh, every time you do that,
them right down and
pull the barrel off the action and off the stock and then get it under that limit. Oh, because if you that oversize charge is double, it might as well just double the price of it.
No. Okay. Well, we're on shipping. So there's not many shippers that will actually ship firearms anymore. But if you go to Canada Post,
yes,
you don't even have to give them an article of incorporation or whatever. Just give them a trade name, whatever, you know, Gun Runners International or whatever. You can actually get I can't remember what they call it. They're small business.
Yeah.
So for one, you get a discount on shipping. Mm-hmm. And then now you can just go online, log in online, create your print label.
Yes.
And they'll print it out right there. You don't have to print it out. You can say, oh yeah, here it is. And I'm pretty sure they can print it out right there. Mm-hmm. And then stick it on, and then that's how you have to ship through Canada Post.
Mm-hmm. But that, you have to do that.
You have to do that.
At home, you need a scale that will be accurate, and you need a measuring tape, and you need to be able to package it. I find I'm not going to get it. Print my label there. I print my label at home. I slap it on there, put a couple of clear coats of tape on it, and then when I go to the post office, I do the drive through one. And it's just like, here comes the right, like through the window into their window. And then I just drive away. Yeah. And I don't have to worry.
And that is really funny because when they ask you what's in the box, and you say a firearm, and they start giving you the whole, oh, well, you have to do.
It's unloaded. Yeah,
it's there. On,
bolt out, blah, blah, blah.
Actually, in Grand Prairie, they didn't do that. They're like, oh, well, you have to do this. I'm like, yeah, it's there.
It's done.
Oh.
They never ask at the drive. I just kind of hand them through the window, and they're just.
Do you even stop, or do you just have that down pat that you just throw it through the window?
Slow crawl. Take it. Yeah. If they don't take it, it's just going through the window onto the floor.
Yeah. And then, in terms of for the shipping piece, what are we using for protecting the item? If it's whether it's a rifle or a scope or something.
You talking insurance, or are you talking packaging?
No, in packaging.
Whatever I've got.
If I'm just using a box, I'll bubble wrap, paper, like newspaper, whatever.
I think one of the things to think about is how you keep like a 9-pound rifle, how you keep this barrel from poking through.
Yeah.
So I like to either attach it to a piece of cardboard, like strap it to a piece of cardboard in the box, or just put like a lot of padding around the barrel and then tape it on there so it can't come off so that doesn't ram through. Because what they'll do, they'll put it on the end and drop it, and then that barrel will like keep striking through.
Because you want to minimize how much it shifts in the box, right? Kind of try to trap it inside, right?
And then the other thing to look for is the bolt, because if that bolt might like pop through the side for something that's really proud, so you'll want to pad that out really nicely. The rest of it, like just basic padding is fine, as I find.
Okay.
Yeah. And like if you're gonna break it down, like Adriel said, just wrap. I would wrap like in cardboard, like the barrel, and then you don't have metal stuff banging on metal stuff. So you wrap everything individually, take the bolt out, wrap the bolt up. So then it's protected. It's not going to open and start sliding around and hitting everything. And then you know that, hey, the condition I showed you in the pictures is the condition you're going to get. It's not going to be like massively damaged in shipping.
And then you mentioned the Benelli box, and I bought the brown paper, and I covered the box to make it discreet. And most gun stores, whenever they ship anything, you're not going to get a box that you see Benelli or Beretta or whatever, or you know, Glock on the side of it. Yeah. It's going to be, so it's definitely something you should make it a little bit more discreet, I guess, in the packaging if it's
Just buy a big ass roll of that stuff because it's cheaper. Yeah. It's cheaper if you buy a big ass roll of it. And then, yeah, if you run out of Christmas packing paper, guess what? You get the brown paper.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Eric, are you listening? This is how you ship guns. So I'm going to bug him. Eric's watching. He's my brother. He shipped me a gun one time, and I'm going to razz him a little bit. But so he sent it in a soft rifle case, locked the nylon strap of it with a cable lock, and then saran wrapped it and shipped it to me. I like, there is no hiding that whatsoever.
The saran wrap was for freshness?
Yeah. But so that was not it. Obviously, it got there fine, and it was actually through Loomis, not through the Canada Post. It wasn't dropped at the door. I had to go and pick it up. But that was an example of not discreet packaging.
Kyle, I got a case with like a gun case with two big locks on it that got mailed to me with a mailing label stuck to the case, stuck to the gun case. Obviously, a gun case.
Yeah.
They didn't seem to care, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that depends.
Anything else we should consider for shipping?
Insurance. Do you insure
insurance
your stuff?
Tracking, right?
I don't insure my stuff.
I can't. I
live my life 1 mile at a time.
Okay. Yeah, I can't say I've insured unless the person who's buying it specifically requests that, which.
And pays for
it. Okay, so that's another one. Making your. And that depends on how you want to do it. Having the buyer pay the shipping, or if you're going to pay, include the shipping in the cost kind of thing.
I just include it. I can't be bothered getting an estimate and figuring it out. And then just to, because by if I'm doing going to do measurements and weight and cost to ship up to a place, I'm going to print my label at the same time because I'm just going to punch all that stuff into the
camera. So you'd rather just be part of the deal that you're covering shipping, right?
So assume like $30 to $50.
Okay.
Yeah. So I would say, If I was including shipping, like I would always list my stuff plus shipping, but then through the wheeling and dealing, if I was, okay, they want shipping included. Okay. I'll pay the shipping, but you don't get to dictate what shipping I use. So I would do standard price parcel the cheapest possible. So yeah, it might take a week, 2 weeks to get there. Yeah. But if they were paying for the shipping, it's like, okay, how soon do you want it there?
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then after shipping, I wanted to cover the exchange of the money.
And when to do it.
And when to do it, because I feel like that's a very delicate, because where some of these items might be $50, $100, but others are going to be thousands of dollars.
And are you getting fucked?
Yeah.
Are they taking your money and not going to send you anything?
Yes.
Yeah. Go ahead, Andrew. Okay.
Well, with restricteds, so there's best practice. There's what people typically do on CGN, and then there's what I do. I try to do the transfer first and say, hey, yeah, I'll take it. Can you start the transfer? Once the transfer is done, I'll EMT you the money. And that's not typical on CGN, but if I can get them to do that, I know they're real. I know they're real. They have a gun license. I know, and I know that they're trying to transfer me something. So if it's a pal, so that's how I do it with restricteds before we had restricteds that we could buy and sell. But now with the non-restricted one, I can still kind of do that with the license verification. So on your ad, some people are sticklers about this, about the pal verification thing. So if you're selling, you say like PAL required on it. And then the person who's buying it knows that that's part of the deal is they have to show a PAL and it has to resolve to the same address. That's my insurance that I'm dealing with a real person and that whether I'm buying and selling, the government knows who they are. And if they fuck me, I can find them.
Yep.
So
or the government can find them. The cops can find them and.
So yeah, the way that I would do it, and this is one thing, like when I, EMT isn't a thing down here, but when I was dealing with EMT, if I was going to send money and they didn't have a password on their EMT, then I wouldn't do it this way. But if I was buying something from somebody, I would send the EMT, but I would not give them the password until I saw the tracking slip. It shows the dimensions. Hmm. the weight,
okay,
the tracking number. You can track it then, so you know. You could still get screwed because, like, hey, something of this weight got shipped. But once I got that tracking number, then, okay, here's the password for the EMT.
Interesting.
Other times, like, you know, I would ask, hey, can you give a deposit? Same thing. I'll send you the shipping information. Then you can send me the rest kind of thing. Yep. I mean, there's still a certain amount of trust. You're shipping something or you're getting something shipped to you. There's still a certain amount of trust. But you're not like you're buying a $1,200 Remington 700. You're not just sending someone $1,200 and then, oh, when are you going to ship that out? Oh, whatever. Now, I've had guys that I would expect them to deal the same way I do. And then I get they send the whole EMT. It's like, okay, well, I'll get that shipped out for you right away.
That's the normal course of things is on CGN. You've got the trader rating. Someone's got good trader rating. You got good trader rating. You yep. say, I'll take it, or you say, maybe you can negotiate a little bit. I'll take it for this much kind of a thing. On CGN, the I'll take it is like a firm commitment to buy, and you're expected to send money after that, right?
Yeah.
But you send the EMT, and then they ship the product. Money, that's the typical.
Money goes to seller, and then seller starts the shipment.
Promptly, within a day or two at most.
And I think I was like the age where, okay, we start the transfer. Once you get the transfer mode notification that, hey, yeah, I can ship this to you or we can meet up or whatever. Okay, now money changes hands.
That works too. Because like as the seller, I've still got the gun. So yeah, we'll do the transfer. You don't pay me? I'm not going to send the gun. And maybe I'll like try to cancel the transfer, right? If push comes to shove. So that covers both buyer and seller. But on CGN, I'm pretty confident. Like that trader rating is really good. It's a really good way of vetting whether you're dealing with someone who's a bona fide seller or buyer. So I'm more likely to just like send the EMT. How much negotiation do you guys do when you buy or sell?
I'm actually really hard. Not hard. I'm bad at negotiation.
Yeah.
You know, I might ask for a few $100 off. Mainly because I hate it when people come to me, I'm selling something and they say, oh, well, you know, you're selling something for $100 and they ask if you'll take 50. Well, you're asking me to drop my price in half. And I like working in percentages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Instead of, oh, that's only $50 less. Well, that's half the asking price. And I hate it when people ask for half off. To me, so I don't go in there and really hard negotiate. I mean, if I see it, you know, that's already a real good deal and it's plus shipping, is like, can you include shipping? Yes, yeah, no. You know, if it's okay, that's market price. Like, I don't know, can you maybe a few $100 or something? Like, maybe at most, I'd ask maybe 20%.
I think it depends on like how far off the mark they are in terms
of that's for sure.
The stuff I bought, they were where the price was where I felt comfortable that, you know, based on what other people were asking. And I didn't really ask for much of a discount.
Like if they're trying to scalp and like take advantage of a situation, I won't even bother even trying to negotiate. It's just like, you're not going to move anywhere where I need you to be for me to buy this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a good way to look at it.
I always try to grind for a couple of points, unless they stay firm. So if someone says firm for price, I expect like there's no negotiation on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But otherwise I'll grind for, and then maybe like 20, 30%. Depends on what it is and like how, like if 30% puts it like way below market value, I won't throw any ideas out like that. I don't like the insulting low ball offers.
Yeah, absolutely.
But a little bit of a negotiation is kind of expected, right?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, Well, I'm sure we're going to get into it, but selling, I price stuff with a little bit of negotiation in mind.
Yeah, and I wanted to get into that. So, like, I don't know, it depends on the product itself and the demand for it and how much is out there, but what are we looking at? If we take the retail price that's generally the product is being sold for across the board, how much, and your product is in good shape, right? It's not exactly brand new in the box, but you know, let's say lightly used, how much are you discounting it?
Well, first thing you need to do in my mind, and I see people do this all the time, they look at how much they paid for it new.
Yes.
And then they're like, oh, well, it's in perfect condition. I only have a box of ammo. And so they're trying to get their money out of it. But they bought it 5 years ago. And then you go look online to see what it's selling for. And it's selling for $300-$400 less than what it sold for when they bought it.
Yeah, the idea.
You've got to look at all your current pricing. Like, yeah, you might lose money on it. And that's unfortunate that the market went that way. But you got to do that. You can't try and get. Sometimes, yeah, you can get your money back out of it. But you got to look at current prices for that.
And that works. That works all the time. It works in your favor sometimes because there's stuff that we bought. You look at the CZ, the Shadow 2 pistols, what they originally were selling for, and then what they were selling for closer to the OIC period, and they went up. They went from, let's say, you know, 1300 to 1900, something like that. So if you bought it at 13 and now you're selling it, you know, at a discount at 17, you've made money on it, right? And there's other things like that too. So
yeah, I look at what the other listings are going for. I don't consider what I paid for it. I look at what the other listings are charging, and if it's too little, I just wait. Just hang on to it for a bit. Yeah, I can sell it at a different time when there's more demand.
Well, and that brings up another. We brought it up with your scope when you were asking last week. Is how much do you need the money? Are you getting rid of guns because hey, you need that cash for something? Like something happened, unfortunately, and you need that cash. Well, that you're gonna be more likely to fire sale something.
Correct.
Because a deal's gonna sell if you're right at market value. Yeah, you might be sitting on it for a bit until someone that really wants that or just wants to buy something comes along. But yeah, if you need the money, then yeah, you're fire sale.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. So that's how desperate you are to sell something. So.
Unless you see something that it happens in that situation where, you know, people want this gun, but they're all sold out everywhere. You can't get them. People aren't selling them. Well, guess what? Now you don't have to fire sale it, and your good chance that you're going to move it for basically whatever price you put up there.
Yep. I think that's fair.
There's a couple of other platforms we didn't talk about as well.
Yeah, I wanted to say that. What else is out there for besides CGN?
Yeah, so we talked about CGN, and CGN really is the big one. So that's why we started off with that one, but. If you want to, there's also Gun Post, which is more specific to firearms. So you can search for Swede here to see what kind of rifles and ammo and all that kind of stuff are. Oh, we got some Mauser clips, 10 for $50. I got them cheaper from Numrich.
So Gun Post, that's where I bought my flamethrower or my agricultural fire tool.
I listed my scope through GunPost, and I can tell you that it was really easy to do. Like we were talking about CGN and posting pictures or whatever. I posted that. I took a bunch of pictures in my basement of the scope, and within 3 minutes, I had it up there. You know.
Yeah. I mean, this is using a newer software. Like CGN's using a software that's very, very out of date. And
it's the old forum format. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, V-Bulletin is what they use. And then the other one is Town Post. Town Post is a little bit more popular in Alberta, but it's in Alberta, Saskatchewan, BC. And CGN, generally, I find the price is kind of high. The cheap ones get snatched up like super quickly because it's got that national buyer and seller base. GunPost, I find the stuff on GunPost. This is like the high volume sellers because I find their prices are all quite high, but you can negotiate down on them. Mm-hmm. And then Town Post, I found quite a few people because this is like a local farming thing. Every once in a while, I find a screamer of a deal on there. Nice. I have to get it. Yeah. But there's some good stuff in there. Good stuff that you can find.
Actually, I saw a picture in there that made me think of one other thing for when you're selling a gun that is. It fits right in because we were talking about pictures. Take good pictures, good backdrop pictures, and like actually detailed pictures. Like if you are in a situation where you can show pictures of the bolt, if you can't show pictures down the bore, if there's a defect, take a picture of the defect to show the defect. Then then you know that, hey, you're putting out a good product. And then I like it when other people do it. It's like, okay, yeah, it's flawed, but you showed me the flaw. Okay, cool.
You guys want to see the most amazing rifle that was on that no one got? Well, someone got. Buddy Mike got this.
Okay. I saw that.
For audio listeners, this is a pistol grip 303 Enfield with a chain as a sling and a laser sight on it. No other sights.
Like a Shockwave style synthetic stock. With, the chain is the sling.
And the laser is the sight. There's no scope. There's no irons.
And that laser is not on the bottom. It's not on top. It's on the side.
It's on the side. It's on the wrong side too. You're if you're a right-handed shooter, you can use your thumb on the left-hand side, but getting it on the other side there is kind of a hard thing to do with your grip.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Anyways.
Oh, I wanted to read that message. So Cole that's listening now says, I find Gun Post has nearly taken over my buying and selling of guns. Much easier to post and much easier to search. The last five or so things I've sold, I'll post to CGN and Gun Post, and it's always sell through Gun Post. Okay. Good feedback. Thank you.
Well, if I was CGN, there's so much to sort through.
Yeah.
There is a lot to sort through. There's a lot of traffic there. And there's a lot to sort through.
Yeah, so there's good and bad to that, right? There's a lot. Yeah. There's a lot of people looking and buying and selling, but then there's a lot to get through.
And I find with CGN, every buyer's looking for a steal.
Yes.
And every seller thinks they have gold.
Everyone wants to hit a home run. Yeah. so we covered CGN, Gun Post, Town Post. What do you guys think about selling on a non-gun community for like Kijiji or something?
I don't let you.
Kijiji, you can't.
You can't, right? So no, but even for actual non-firearms.
Yeah, I don't think Craigslist, I don't think you can.
Facebook Marketplace, you can't.
No.
I wouldn't bother with any of them. Not even for accessories.
Use.com, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I was talking more about accessories too. Like
Kijiji will let you sell hunting gear, so accessories, like if you have a scope or for that. But I think if you just get down to the actual firearm part, chances are it's going to get flagged.
Okay.
I believe that there's just more buyers on CGN, buyers for that kind of equipment.
Yeah.
Accessories, there's going to be more people buying it, and a more concentrated group of people.
Oh, for sure.
You could put a set of binos or something like that on Kijiji, but I think I would get closer to, I would make more on CGN or something like that.
And with that, I think Marketplace like Facebook is overtaking Kijiji.
And they are,
Your accessories, and you get all the, you can put it to the marketplace, and then you, whatever group, like there's buy and sell groups all over there for hunting gear, all that stuff, and just cross post, and you, one click, you can have it in literally countless places if you're part of all those groups.
But the problem with Facebook Marketplace is that if you're trying to sell binos on there, you're competing with the crackheads who are stealing the binos from the stores, because that's where they're offloading their equipment, so... Your very reasonably priced stuff might look very expensive compared to the crackhead merchandise.
Crackhead merchandise.
Hmm. Yeah.
You want to get some cheap DeWalt tools? Go on Facebook Marketplace. Yeah. Crackheads will go into the Home Depot and walk out with a whole bunch of them and then sell them right on there. And there'll be hundreds of listings in your local area for that stuff.
I think one of the last things I wanted to bring up was... specifically if you're a seller, when is the best time to be selling stuff? Are you selling hunting gear just before the hunting season starts?
Yeah.
If you're selling IPSA gear, are you more likely to do better if you're selling before the spring and summer season starts? Things like that. Like when is the right time? You know.
So in my opinion, a lot of people don't think ahead.
Yes.
So for hunting season, August, early September. Depending where your hunting season, your main hunting season kicks off, shooting stuff, springtime.
Okay. They'll be buying even into November.
Yeah, like throughout hunting season. Yeah.
Or maybe they're gone. They missed it. They're like, "Fuck this, God! I don't want this thing anymore.
I gotta chuck it in the river." And then,
yeah, and then want something else. But no, like, because my site, the hunting gear guy gets like a lot of hunting related traffic, and it goes up and up and up and up until like November, December, and then it starts tailing down. Really slow over the summer, and then it picks back up again in the fall.
As a buyer, plan ahead. Buy your stuff in like your hunting stuff in January, February,
Black Friday.
Yeah, or March, or we're talking used, not new.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
I don't think Buddy selling out of his garage is going to have a Black Friday sale.
sometimes the Black Friday sales are better than you can get used. But here's the thing: guns?
If you buy out of season, out of competition season, out of season, every day is Black Friday.
I don't know. Try to buy a Savage Axis off CGN and see what the lowest price you can get. I bet you that the Black Friday price that Cabela's had is lower than what you can get for use.
Yeah. But you look at even like quads, skidoos. If it's out of season, you buy a quad, you buy it in wintertime. Nobody's buying them. Nobody's using them. When you're buying a sled, buy it in the summertime. No one's buying them. No one's using them. It's kind of the same thing, in my opinion, with the hunting and hunting gear.
Yeah.
And that, like, it's out of season because people don't think ahead, so there's not a lot of demand for it.
That's true.
I'll show you that the trend. If you're interested in seeing it, that's what the trend roughly looks like. So through like March, April, it's like kind of crappy, going up and up and up. September, October, November, getting up there. December, start of December, it starts tailing off again. So back up again, and then it'll stop.
It's seasonal, right? So,
but you're still seeing your peak in like September, October, or in September.
I mean November, late November, even. Uh-huh. I think there's a lot of guys who just like, maybe they got their deer and like they're like, yeah, I'm gonna get another rifle, or I'm gonna get a rifle for my kid, or I'm gonna, you know, the activity spurns even more buying after the activity even than before, because we're bad at planning.
Yeah. I think one selling or buying thing we didn't mention was consigning through a gun store.
Never.
No, I know. I'm not saying it's a pro or
you're going to lose 10-20% right away.
Yeah. But what is the pro to that? The confidence that it's
going to be lazy. You have lazy someone and stupid. It's all pros.
Yeah, so you have people walking through the store, which is already looking to buy a gun, and so you have this used one that's a discount. Okay, so it might sell faster. You have a sales guy willing to push that. Maybe not push it as hard as the new stuff, but you have someone there willing to push it. It's not scrolling through online, non-restricted. They get it right then. Con, you're losing 10-20% right off the top. Yeah. Easy.
Okay.
Can't deal with it. I can't take it. No,
I just wanted to present that too, because that is one of the.
Or you could just sell it to the store too. Never mind on consignment. You can just sell. Oh, I'm going to upgrade my rifle. I'm going to go to the store, trade this one in, and then buy something new off the shelf, and you get fucked twice.
Yeah. You take the hit on your stuff, and then
at once.
But it's less money out of your pocket, so it does work for some people.
Okay.
I would rather just sell it on CGN or Gunpost. Yeah. Get max. Oh,
same. Maximum value. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. And then buy on sale or used or whatever, however I get that good deal on the next one.
Okay.
But I'm a buy low, sell high kind of guy. So
you are.
I can't do the easy one that costs me money.
Like seeing like, I could get this much same thing with like selling versus trading in vehicles. Oh, I could get that much. But I'm selling. When you go to a gun store, you're selling to a dealer, so you're gonna get negotiated harder than if you're just selling private sale. No, because absolutely. All they're gonna do is turn around, put it back on the rack, and they got it. And I don't knock them for this whatsoever, because they got to make money too.
Got to make.
They're
money,
the dealer.
Yeah. Right. Sure.
But the rifle it sucks up on the seller side. Yeah.
Yeah, you're losing some of the profit for the ease of the legwork or reducing the legwork, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think we covered it all.
What's worth buying used and not worth buying used?
Good one, yeah.
Ammo is not worth buying unless it's a screaming deal or you can get it locally because the shipping on it
is yes, in the box and not someone's. Don't buy hand loads. Do not buy hand loads, period.
Don't buy ammo at gun shows that isn't in a box and like
the old Ziploc bag deal.
Even the ones in boxes, it's probably reloads. Man. Yeah.
Factory boxes. Cause yeah, you don't want to don't shoot someone else's hand loads.
You know what I love doing when I buy? So accessories when selling are worthless. If you sell a rifle and you got a bunch of accessories, sell the accessories separately. If you're buying, try to get them to throw in accessories. Mm-hmm.
Accessories,
Hey, you got a holster for that? Hey, you know, I was also going to look for this. Do you have anything like
extra
that?
Extra bags.
Yeah, because sometimes they'll like, oh, yeah, I got them. I was thinking about maybe using them for the next gun. Why don't you throw those in there? You know. Because like some of that stuff you can definitely
$25-$50 at a piece of you save, then it makes it worth it, right?
Yeah, and Russ is saying used guns make more money for a store than if they sell you a new gun, and I could see that, because especially like there's ways now that the smaller mom and pop stores are able to get their pricing on new guns too, so that they can actually price and compete with the big box stores. But a lot of times, like, they don't buy the volume. So if they're buying from a distributor, then they're not getting the pricing. So they don't have the margin, because they still have to have they still want you to shop local instead of, oh, but I can go on Cabela's and I can save a couple hundred bucks by ordering it on Cabela's.
A good shop will price match. A good shop will say, you know what, we want your business. Yeah, okay, we'll price match. We won't make as much, but we're still making
something. I've seen situations where, like, Cabela's has had stuff, and you look at the flyer, and it had conversations with gun shop owners, and like, I can't even buy it for that for the store. Mm. So, possible.
Yeah. It's probably why a lot of the small shops are going out of business. Their local clientele is buying online or going into the cities to buy from the bigger box places.
Yeah. But there is stuff coming out now. Like, I can't remember what the name of it. I was listening to a podcast earlier this week, and Buddy was saying he was just down in Fort Worth at this show, industry show, and it was so that they can buy at the same price, buy direct without like a middleman, so that they can get like the same pricing as like Cabela's or Canadian Tire, big box store, so that they can actually compete and actually drive business through the door.
Cool.
Yeah. Eric saying,
write a good description. Make sure that the description has like all the details up. I don't want to guess what cartridge your stupid rifle is in. You should just say what it, you should write what the length of barrel is. You should like, if there's any mods on it, you should put the mods on there.
Yeah.
Like, be specific about them.
Well, it'll reduce all the questions you get too. Then you won't get out.
No, it won't. It won't.
But are you trying to say people don't read the descriptions?
Oh, no, people don't read. But it won't save the questions. But for the people who actually do read, it's much nicer.
It'll raise the value of it.
Yes.
Because they'll see like, oh, yeah, it's coming with that. Oh, yeah, it's coming with that.
And it looks more legit, not just, hey, I'm selling a Remington 700. Okay, there's a million different models of Remington 700.
What else?
What is it?
Like, I've gone as so far as to, like, if I've got a bunch of accessories on it, to price out, like, this is what the current price value is for these things.
Retail value. Yeah.
If you were to buy all this to set this rifle up the way it is retail, this is how much it's going to cost. I'm asking this much.
Yeah.
It's actually nice to see that too. Right. Cause it's like, okay, that does look like a good deal.
Yeah. Eric saying, don't buy ammo at gun shows unless you find tracers.
Some black tips, some
orange API. Tips. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That then it's okay. Yeah. That's worth the risk.
Some Cabela's API in there. Speaking of, this is reminding me, I got to sell a bunch of shotguns. I got too many shotguns. I need to put some on gun posts and that kind of thing. Yeah. Cool. Anything else to mention for the topic?
I think we covered a lot.
Yeah. I think we covered good stuff. A lot. Yep. EMT. Back in the day, we used to do like Canada Post, like money transfers and all sorts of other nonsense to pay. But since like EMT
cash on demand, COD.
COD. Oh my God. Yeah. Horrible days.
EMTs are better. Way.
Mm-hmm. EMTs are magic. You can like move money to someone else. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I miss EMTs.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's just get into listener feedback then. And I don't really have any. We've been kind of hitting on the Facebook as we've been going here. Emails. We didn't have any of those. None of those.
No, just the email on the full auto match.
Oh yeah. Kyle, do you want to do the YouTube comments?
Yes, we have a good selection here. So first few will be on, most of them are on episode 533. And we got Tony, question for Multigun. Is dumping the pistol mandatory or is reholstering an option? And before we respond, there was a response to it saying the only time you can reholster your pistol in competition is when the stage is over. Under the ROs, unload and show clear. If clear, hammer down and holster command. And that is actually not true. Most, you're actually not allowed to, but USPSA does actually allow reholstering of your pistol.
Yeah, it depends on the rule set. You have to consult your local club.
Yeah. Now, you will be never required to reholster.
Okay.
But,
and realize you shouldn't ever, because the stages should be designed so you have a spot.
Yes, Rocky Mountain 3 Gun this year, that was another match where you had the option to reholster, but their dump bin was literally a 2 gallon bucket on the ground.
Oh,
so
it wasn't angled or anything like that?
No, it was just slanting on the ground, so you had to bend down to the ground to dump your pistol. So at that time, and if you are going to reholster, do it very, very carefully. Make sure you're on safe. If you can, drop the mag racket. Some, if you're going to reholster, do require that, especially if you're going to go prone. That's why actually a lot of stages where you start rifle long range, you start without a round in the chamber.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you're going prone. Well, we don't want, even in your holster, a loaded gun pointed back at everyone watching you shoot.
Yeah.
But so sometimes it is an option. Usually it's not a good option. There's obviously exceptions to every rule, but you will be never required to reholster.
It's too hard as an RO. Because like as an RO, you have to be like, okay, that was just, he just holstered that gun. Did he have his safety on? If he didn't have his safety on, he just like, he did an unsafe act and you got to stop him right now. But how are you supposed to do that on the clock? Yeah. It's not possible. Did he rack that round out? Did he get the mag out? Did he rack around?
Especially under the clock, it is a high risk.
Yeah.
And in my mind, a very advanced maneuver.
It doesn't really let you do a lot more with stage design that you couldn't do with just like putting a dump barrel there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tony then says, manipulation, change the name to I'm from Canada, eh? And then he says, forget about steel challenge, try the deer challenge speed shoot.
What is that?
That sounds interesting.
Were
we talking like a field full of deer and then all the deer tags or something? Maybe that's what he's talking about, because we could get like 3 deer tags. So if you have a field of deer, now it's a deer speed shoot. See how many you can get and before they all run off.
Kind of like that steel challenge where you're going to knock down the plates. What is that? And you par out. Everyone pars out. You have to see how many you get.
Oh.
Pro-Am? Is it Pro-Am? Anyways.
Yeah, the Pro-Am, yeah. Then he goes on, we'll be equipped with suppressors, not even sound moderators. And that was with the deer call.
Silencers even.
Yeah, they weren't suppressors. They were silencers.
Pew, pew.
He says he prefers a flat 2-stage trigger, but to be honest, when I am on the clock, the difference is very tiny for me.
We talked about this. Double tapping is faster with a single stage. That's why I like them.
Yeah. And he says, Greta face, how dare you, Kelly? Sad Tony face. we got couple comments on the Charles Daly 101 single shot shotguns first look videos.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the first one is actually in Spanish.
Ah.
I'm going to give it a go, but I do have the translation. Es una chaluda de escopeta de estas escopetas castañoy están escasas. And that translates to, it's a cool shotgun. These Kesinyoi shotguns are in short supply.
Maybe where he is, but...
Maybe.
They're fucking everywhere.
I got a whole bunch of them. There's two up there. There's a couple over here.
Yeah. So there you go. Then a little example of my horrible Spanish reading as well. Corey H. asks, what happened there? Okay. Yeah, Corey H. asks, can you shoot a slug through a factory modified choke? And yes, you can. That is as tight as I would personally want to go. But they do say with the rifled slugs that they're rifled to give the lead a place to go so that you could even shoot them out of a full.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not about to do that with my Benelli. But a modified, yeah, I'll absolutely do. You can do that. That's about the tightest I'll go on a slug is a modified.
Yeah, for like good accuracy, I fired them out of fulls. Like if I've got a course of fire where I've got the full choke in my 3-gun shotgun, and I got a slug shot as well, I'll send it. It'll be fine. Yeah. You don't want to shoot a sabo slug out of there because they have a hard jacket on them.
Yeah, and there's no place for it to press to.
No, there's nowhere for it to go, but it'll be fine on anything else. Now,
that's an interesting note with the rifled slugs. It's not there to create spin on the slug. It's there to give the lead a place to go when it goes through the choke.
Mm-hmm. I had seen someone on Reddit actually had shot their shotgun and done some real damage to it, firing something out of a full choke. Any guesses?
Oh. Something out of a full choke?
Yeah.
Did he shoot like buckshot?
Worse.
Did he shoot what?
Steel BB.
Ooh. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
So if you shoot steel BB, so like chokes in a shotgun, some shotgun manufacturers will actually like say this is a mod for lead, this is a full for steel. Yes. Like they'll give two ratings for it.
And that's that's in your owner's manual.
Or sometimes even on your choke. My chokes say it right on the choke that this is a this for this and a this for that. But suffice to, that was out of a Gersan MC312. He had fired a steel BB. And he said he only fired two shots out of a full choke, and it had bulged it enough that he couldn't get the choke out with the choke tool.
Is this, you said Gersan and a buddy of yours?
No, on Reddit.
Oh, not okay.
Not a buddy of mine. Not him.
Do I know this person?
he'd know better. He knows better.
Yeah, he knows better. Yes.
Yeah.
I shouldn't even have thought that. I just thought you said a friend. I'm like, oh. But I don't think he goes much tighter than a mod for hunting anyways. But back to episode 533, and Eddie says, 410 slugs aren't that bad for deer as long as you keep it within a reasonable range. A quarter ounce slug is about 110 grains and at 1780 feet per second is comparable to a 357 Magnum out of a rifle. Okay, fair enough. And he says, a 40 Smith & Wesson CZTS magazine. Good luck with that. I've tried to get iRun Guns and Aztec to import magazines for a rifle. No luck with that. On another note, it's interesting how...
Wait. Which rifle uses the TS mags?
I don't know.
I don't know of a rifle that uses the TS mags. I know of rifles
because the Scorpion is proprietary to the Scorpion. They didn't even take their pistol mags to make it compatible, which was unfortunate.
Yeah, the TS, I'm not aware of a rifle that uses TS mags. The TS mags are outrageously expensive, and they're only outrageously expensive because they're made for... That outrage. Well, that's not a. It's their more expensive pistol. I don't think
they were $1,500 to $1,700 when they were able to be sold.
Before the rush.
Yeah,
they were up there up to, Even up to like 2K.
I'm talking like normal retail, not Ban Rush or anything like that.
It's hard to remember. It was so long ago. Anyways, I'm not aware of a rifle that takes those. I'm aware of rifles that can take the CZ75 mags, which MechGar makes those, and you can get those in Canada, no problem.
No. He says, on another note, it's interesting how things have come full circle with 9mm versus 40 Smith & Wesson. 40 Smith & Wesson was supposed to make 9mm obsolete, but with new bullet technology, 40 Smith & Wesson is now the one that's obsolete. And I 100% agree. We actually had this discussion on Saturday about 40, and I basically, told him it's useless. If you want 40, go 10mm or 45, but 40,
Yeah, I think in competition is all 9mm. I think the price, because like 9mm is so cheap.
No. If you go to limited in Ipsic, be major power factor, and this does make sense, but you can't even do 38 super like that. Your minimum caliber for major is a 40 Smith & Wesson. I would like them to just lower major power factor and make 9mm allowable. But especially open 9mm open guns are beating themselves apart in crack and slides with an open class with comps and everything. A limited gun, it just destroy it.
Yeah.
But Tony responded to that saying, I think cost is still a big factor for the enthusiast community. It's like, no, it's more 40 Smith & Wesson's dead. Period. I think Eddie's got it with the better bullet technology and realizing, hey, the 9mm does pretty darn good on its own. We don't need, and it's a little more pleasant to shoot.
Can fit more in the mag.
Eddie goes on to comment, I still think Adriel should get a rifle in 6.5 PRC. Yes, he can shoot a deer. He can shoot deer two fields over at 1,000 yards as long as you have permission to hunt on all those fields. I thought that's how prairie hunters do it.
Permission for prairie hunters?
I don't.
That deer, I shot it all the way over there. It's for some reason it died on your field. You mind if I pick it up? That's the permission, right?
Yes. Yeah. Look at the tracks. It went there. Yeah.
Don't look at the tracks.
Don't look at the tracks. Kelly doesn't like leggings that are see-through. Meh. Yay, the Gunny Girl calendar is coming out. That was also Eddie. And then our last YouTube comment was Tony saying, try the 250 grains on the 4570. I don't see why you can't hunt with that. You can't. It's just you're close in. You're not field hunting with a 4570. In my opinion, you're not.
No, I don't want it. I that 300 meter shot that I made with the 6.5 Creedmoor was a chip shot. It was so super easy. I don't know if I would take that with a 4570.
I don't know.
My drop at 300 with a 4570, probably getting there. Probably got to do some math.
It's probably a lob a little bit. But I mean, I haven't looked at it, but especially like 250 grains of a 4570, that's a heavy bullet going 300 yards. If you're in the bush, you're not shooting 100 yards. Yeah, there's no reason why you can't use it.
Mm-hmm. But that holds true with every firearm.
Yes.
All centerfire cartridges work. Like if you're only shooting within 50 yards, well, everything works. 4570 works at close range. Sure, so does an SKS. So does a 30-30. So does a
243. Some of them will actually be too fast at that close stuff, though.
Oh, that 243 on that buck just devastated it. It broke apart. That bullet was on the hide on the other side, didn't even exit, but because it did all the damage on the inside. Well,
like I was saying, 243 is, in my opinion, the deer rifle.
Yeah.
243, 6mm, those are awesome deer cartridges.
Yeah. I like 6.5 for just a little bit more weight, so I can go through the punch the shoulders and get through both sides and do some big damage. The 243 will stop before it gets to the other side. There's too much bone in the way.
Yeah.
The deer dies regardless. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the 6mm is a little bit bigger of a cartridge. I would run 90, 100 grain bullets with the 6mm. And that was a deer gun. That actually took a sheep, I think, 6 to 800 yards too. That 6 mil.
Hmm. 600 or 800. Holy, yeah.
It's all shot placement at that point. Like you can kill a lot of stuff at some incredible ranges if you have shot placement, but that margin of error is so small.
Yeah, I think it is just all a completely shot placement, regardless what you use. You can shoot them with a 22 if you get them in the right spot. It doesn't matter. I think that's the 300 Win Mag in the guts, and they're still going to run like 100 yards or whatever into the bush.
Yeah. For hunting though, I mean I don't go crazy where, okay, I've seen a 300 Weatherby Mag shot as a deer gun, and it just is devastating. It literally disintegrated the entire side of it. It was a quartering shot, and it literally disintegrated the whole side of the deer.
Mm-hmm.
But so I like a wide margin of error, so I don't like headshots or neck shots. If you can do double long, you got a much bigger target zone. But then sizing your rifle to it, like not going overboard and like, okay, well, I need, you know, the biggest rifle I can run out there, but give yourself a good margin of error. Not this has to hit within this centimeter in order to make that kill. That's my opinion. But that is it for YouTube comments.
Good stuff. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. All right. Getting on Instagram, Facebook. We've been kind of talking about it as we're going along here. We will review what people bought from our Cabela's link on the next show. I was talking to some people on Discord. Some of the purchases might not be there. So when you purchase using that link, make sure you go directly from the link to Cabela's to do the buy, and then it should go through. But who knows? I don't know what's blocking it. Maybe there's like ad blockers or something like that that's not letting the tracking go through. Who knows? I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyways, there's an affiliate link to Cabela's on the side of slamfireradio.com. So if you want to buy something from Cabela's, wait until Boxing Day because you only have like 1 month, and then buy. Mm-hmm. They're gonna have some good prices. Last year, Boxing Day, it's Black Friday of Canada. Mm-hmm, they had some good like Black Friday sales, but then for their Boxing Day, they had some a couple extra things. A lot of stuff was repeat, but a couple extra things for Black Friday. So take a look there. Thanks to everyone who supports us on Patreon and Player. We are streaming live to Player today. If you'd like to email the show, send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. And finally, shout outs. Kyle?
Not necessarily a shout out, but a recommendation. It's a new podcast that just started out. They have six episodes out, longer form. Still in the gun world, but more guys sitting down talking all sorts of stuff. Based out of Grand Prairie, it is called The Gray Range by David Rousseau, and he writes a bunch of poetry in that, and he starts out every episode with a reading out of one of his books. And so I've been binging that for the last couple of days, and I think it'll be pretty good, because they've had some good conversations, some wide broad range of conversations. But he's doing more long form, so he's getting up to a couple 3 hours kind of thing.
Cool. I got a shout out for or a recommendation for Epic Arms. They're a YouTube channel. They review guns and that kind of thing, and they put one out on the Stevens 334, and I really liked it. They covered all the same stuff I would cover, and good, a succinct, entertaining matter. No, you got anything?
Just to the Montreal range that hosted the IPSC match, and they put one on every month through the winter, and it's appreciated. So thank you.
Cool. Finally, join our Discord server. We got one of those, and we chat on there and whatnot, and post pictures of deer that we've slain. Watch us on Facebook, YouTube, and Player. Join us on join the CCFR. Yeah, we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Good night, Kelly and Dave.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.